Warning, this podcast contains explicit language in 3, 2, fuck.
Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by Pro Scripture Strength Bible and All, perfect for those biblically inspired headaches. It's stronger than Prayer Bayer and lasts longer than Bibliprofen. Bible and All, because somehow the historical books are even worse than the Pentateuch. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
And there tends to be an urge to assert that across that boundary into the unknown lies the handiwork of God. If that's where you're going to put your God, then God is an ever-receding pocket of scientific ignorance.
Hi, I'm Mackenzie. I am 5 years old, and even I know we came from filthy monkeys.
Thursday.
It's January 23rd.
And the extra week before the Super Bowl is worse for the NFL than Junior Seau.
I'm no illusions.
I'm Heath Enright, and from Profederate Enclave, New York, New York.
And from forcibly defederated Podunk, Georgia, this is The Scathing Atheist.
On this week's episode, we revel in the joy of getting piss-drinking and nun-fucking in the same news cycle.
We'll learn how to rape like a Muslim.
And Lucinda will join us to put on our monocles, because it's time to read one Chronicles.
But first, the diatribe. My inbox is full of idiots. As you may know, the other day I went on the Most Excellent Cognitive Dissonance podcast and gave Tom and Cecil a tarot card reading. And since then, I've been getting a vodka piss stream of woo merchants and dipshits emailing me to tell me just how wrong I've got it. Now, the way they generally justify their pseudoscientific hobby is by pointing out that tarot isn't about fortune-telling, it's about divination. It's about helping people through their problems with universal symbolism. It's a way to reinforce positive messages and give people hope. What's the harm in that? Well, as I pointed out last Monday when I did the reading for Tom and Cecil, which you can hear on episode number 134 of their fine program, there's plenty of harm. If your goal is to help people through their problems and aid them in seeing things from a new angle, don't you think you should have some kind of qualification to do that beyond a spare $14 the last time you were at Spencer's? It's belittling to psychologists and psychiatrists to think that any jackass who memorized a few zodiacal influences on some pretty pictures can step in and do their job with no chance of fucking it up. We're talking about the human psyche, for shit's sake. That's the most complicated thing that we know about. And you're just going to dive in there with nothing but the idiot's guide to vague verbosity and then ask me what's the harm? Now, that should be all the answer that I have to give, but it's not all the answer that I can give. Whatever spiritual caveats you might offer, as soon as you start shuffling your deck, you're putting yourself in a position of authority that you didn't have to do anything to earn. And it's going to be damn easy to take advantage of the person across the table. Now, even if you don't succumb to that temptation, you're just priming the pump for the less principled person that comes after you. And for what? So that you can spend half an hour giving them what DJ Grothy calls your aw shucks advice? You know, you may think you're giving them a positive message, but how the fuck do you know? You tell somebody to focus on what makes them happy, but you don't know how much they love torturing rats with hacksaws? You tell them to never give up on love, but you don't know about the restraining order? You tell them to follow their dreams, but you don't know if they dream about disemboweling postal workers? Look, people who are actively seeking help shouldn't be pissing away time checking with sorcerers. You know, that goes for tarot card readers, psychics, necromancers, astrologers, palm readers, and crystal gazers, but it also goes for pastors, priests, bishops, reverends, rabbis, mullahs, and monks. Instead, these people should be going to somebody who's qualified to help them through science-based means, and they shouldn't have to navigate a complicated menu to find them. And yes, by the way, I do group all of the above in the same category. I'll freely admit that religious leaders are almost universally better trained to help people with personal crises, but at the same time, they're deferred a lot more authority because of it. You know, for every one person that would discount their doctor's advice on the word of their cartomancer, there are a million who would do so on the advice of their priest. You know, just consider the strict licensing and regulations on psychiatrists and psychologists. If it came to light that a psychologist was sleeping with one of their patients, that's probably a career-ending scandal. But as Dr. Daryl Ray points out in both The God Virus and Sex and God, anybody who stays in one church long enough is going to hear stories about some pastor sleeping with some congregant. Sometimes that pastor will be, you know, quietly moved to another church. Other times they won't be. But no horny pastor has ever lost his license to past over it. And I don't think I need to tell you nobody ever lost their license to read tarot card over any abuse of any kind ever. There is no harmless bullshit. And I really don't care how many paragraphs you can cram into one email. You're never going to convince me that your faith is quantitatively better than the other faith just because yours has playing cards.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast and bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is Hyperborean Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to migrate?
It is fucking freezing here. But you know me, I'm like an African swallow. The bird, not the ebony porn title. Non-migratory.
Don't worry, though. I'm sure if the Weather Channel had an 11-day forecast, there would have been a high temperature above freezing on it somewhere.
We're doing our best. In our lead story tonight, from the Sister Come Mother file, a nun working in Italy failed to plan her parenthood very well and recently gave birth, opting instead for termination of her job for breaking the vow of chastity. According to her account, God secretly fucked her while she was masturbating on an airplane, but despite the well-known Joseph V. Mary precedent, her immaculate conception alibi was ignored. Thanks, Obama.
That's got to be it, though. I mean, it couldn't have just been that some nun fucked a dude multiple times, could it? Because how the hell could that be international news?
The Last Scion released the following statement about this. Quote, "It was God's dick, and I was married to God at the time, so what the fuck? Just wait, my half-brother Jesus is going to be right back, and he'll tell all you fuckers. You'll find out," end quote.
And apparently putting her money where her mouth is on the issues of contraception and abortion didn't earn her any favor at all in the eyes of the Holy See.
And as a tribute to the scathing atheist and our mocking nicknames for Pope Francesco Rinaldi, the new mom named her son Francesco.
All right, now look, I'm not just going to come out there and say that the Pope's her baby daddy, but he has shown a recent interest in tits. I'm just throwing that out.
Newly minted tit man.
And moving on to the ringing endorsement from the Voices in My Head file, we bring you an update to a story we covered back in episode 38. You'll recall Pennsylvania State Representative Rick Saccone from Heath making jokes about how his last name kind of sounds like a reference to a testicular amputation.
And we all learned a valuable lesson that day. You buy your anal beads from the store.
And remember, he said buy, not rent. Anyway, in addition to Saccone's lopsided nuts, we also discussed his brain-dead brainchild HB1728, a proposal that calls for the words "In God We Trust" to be prominently displayed in every Pennsylvania classroom. While trying to justify this crevice-wiping use of the Constitution on a local television show last Sunday, Saccone claimed that he had the backing of the atheist community with this bill. He cited the off-the-record support of the unnamed head of Pennsylvania Atheists, a group that neither speaks for all atheists nor exists.
And in the other Santorum news, the Maldives has added tape to the list of sticky red stuff that goes with rape. That's right. Abdullah Yameen, president of the Islamic theocracy, has vetoed a proposed law that would make it illegal to rape your wife while she fills out divorce paperwork.
What?
Yep. He called the rape ban, quote, un-Islamic. That's right, an un-Islamic rape ban.
Well, good for it. I mean, what higher ethical standard can a law aspire to than un-Islamic?
And this means two things. One, Islam has justified rape somewhere in the book.
Right.
And two, the Islamic idea of justified rape specifically includes those awkward months before the woman gets tried for divorce. So, just to be clear, you're a woman, and you find out the hard way that you married a righteous rapist, and now you want a divorce. Getting your consent back is harder than getting a gun. There's a trial, a lengthy waiting period. Fortunately for women, though, the divorce settlement process itself does not take very long because women don't own property.
But in some cases, though, I think the husband gets visitation rights to the vagina on weekends, so that's like property.
Friday and every other Saturday. According to Religion News Service, quote, "The bill says a husband cannot force his wife to have sex if the couple have filed for divorce, dissolution, or mutual separation, and if the intent is to transmit a sexual disease," end quote. So, think about that for a second. The bill didn't even target rapists with AIDS unless they were actively intending to infect their victim, like Cartman breaking in and injecting him with AIDS in his mouth with a syringe. Am I crazy, or did someone just use religion to defend the rights of AIDS-spreading rapists? Do we really need to keep making this podcast? Are we really necessary here?
We should have been retired before we ever started.
And from the Golden Calf Showers file, a Hindu cult in northern India is touting the medicinal benefits of drinking pre-dawn virgin cow urine. Yeah, so they're not complete idiots. At least they don't go out there in the middle of the fucking day and drink piss from slutty octomom cows like a crazy person. Slutty cow piss burns when you drink it from all the herpes, you know? That's how it is. Either way, they're giving a new meaning to the term India Pale Ale, or IPA, for sure.
So I think it's worth noting that this story does come to us from the paragon of journalistic integrity that is the Daily Mail, so we'll take it with a grain of creatinine. But we're reporting on it anyway because they had pictures. So, I mean, honestly, if the real story here is unscrupulous Daily Mail photographer coaxes Hindu man into catching cow urine with a drinking glass, it would still be newsworthy enough to make piss puns about. So
it's a great fucking story. Now, according to the cult and the studies they didn't perform, the hot champagne helps fight cancer, diabetes, tuberculosis, stomach problems, and baldness. So even if drinking cow piss upsets your stomach, you're one of those weird people that gets their stomach upset by drinking cow piss, these guys have the cure for that, which is literally made up of the piss they made you drink. I'm sorry, we got to go back to that. Well, that's literally what's happening.
But that's what I was wondering, though. So, like, if you drink cow piss, and then you piss into a cup and drink that, and then you drink your cow piss, and then you drink the piss from that, would that be Hindu homeopathy?
That's exactly what it would be. Now, a guy named Jairam Singhal, a decade-long urine alcoholic, said the following about the undeniable success of the placebovine excrement remedy. Quote, "I had diabetes, but ever since I've started drinking cow urine, my diabetes levels have been under control," end quote.
Well, there you go.
Basically, I got a bunch of diabetes about 10 years ago, and I immediately started drinking urine every morning. Thanks to the magic pee, I've completely avoided getting more diabetes since. My levels haven't gone up by a single diabetes.
I so want to see Wilford Brimley now doing a cow piss commercial. And I would point out that he's still alive so he could do it, but we record on Wednesday and release on Thursday, so who knows if that'll be true by the time you hear
TikTok.
This.
Now, large numbers of people dumb enough to buy urine are lining up at local cow shelters. To keep up with the surging demand, a successful milk lemonade stand has popped up in the city of Agra. Obviously, thanks to these honest-to-God piss sippers, we'll need 30 seconds on the clock. Thank you. Slogans for the medicinal urine restaurant. Go.
Not on the rug, man.
All right. Eat shit and die, drink piss and live.
Would you like to take a piss, or will that be for here?
What about the men's room and the dessert menu have urinal cakes?
You got cancer? Well, you're in luck.
milk lemonade. Number one in your mouth, number one in your heart.
Shit.
Pee in your mouth, Joe.
Urinary tract perfection.
How about our famous urine sampler combo appetizer features assorted cheese whiz, golden drench fries, and potato leek soup.
Oh, nice, nice. The best leek since Snowden.
We cross streams like Peter Venkman up in here.
Oh, I got a good one. Bladder ingredients, bladder pizza.
Mappa John's. What about the new drinkable cure for cancer? Piddle? Yellow, different, better.
And finally tonight, in Stimulate Your Clit for Jesus News, wayward youth dildo dealer and C-list porn star Farrah Abraham has announced a forthcoming book on Christian parenting. It's set to publish after the completion of her trilogy of erotic fiction, or as she actually said, quote, "My next trilogy, so three books, is an erotic sex novel." End quote. Because, you know, she's like a wordsmith and stuff.
And based on my extensive C-list research, she's one of those dealers who's also a user. She must go through dildos like a wood chipper. Fargo. Just...
Now, you might remember Farrah from the MTV exploitation of soul-crushing adolescent Mistakes and Tragedies' Teen Mom, but I'm kind of hoping you don't. If you remember at all, I hope it was from the sex tape that she accidentally sold to a porn distributor for over $1 million.
Who else buys sex tapes?
Or perhaps you remember her from that awkward toe in the trigger guard of the shotgun moment you had when you realized that a teen mother come porn actress come sex toy seller wrote a book, and it was a fucking New York Times bestseller.
Well, they say write what you know. And this bitch knows getting knocked up at 15, the father dies in a redneck accident, Lord of the Cock Rings trilogy, and finally Christian parenting. I mean, that's a true story people can relate to. Lots of dudes in red states listening right now are thinking to themselves, you just described my wife. You know?
And as sad as this story is for every piece of literature ever penned, I should note that it is a powerful reminder that someone can rise up out of poverty, teen pregnancy, and untimely widowhood as long as they're white and have great tits.
Well, it's good to know I've got potential.
I guess on that reference to Heath's moobs, we'll close out headlines tonight. Heath, thanks as always for joining me.
I'm currently holding a rocks glass of scotch in my cleavage and drinking it. That's happening right now. First ever on radio.
And when we come back, Lucinda will join us to learn that books of the Bible apparently have reruns. First Chronicles in Rhyme. Have I told you the story about the crappy King Saul, the ass-hunting bastard who squandered it all, the Philistine fighter who lost many men? Oh, I have? Well, fuck you. I'm going to tell it again. Have I told you the story about that other king, David, who defeated the Moabites and left them enslaved, whom God loved in battle and whom won every war? I have? Oh, well, fuck you. I'm going to tell it some more. How about Solomon? Did I tell you his tale? The palace he built at incredible scale? Oh, I told you he's wise, super fertile, and rich? Well, I'm going to tell you again, because I'm First Chronicles, bitch. That's right, I've got nothing unspoken to say. God said read this book and you have to obey, so consider the previous four books as primers and consider this one to be God with Alzheimer's. Well, you don't care who begat Hezron or who Hezron begat, or maybe you do, but you've got it down pat. After all, we've discussed it, and I'll even admit this isn't even the first time we've repeated that shit. We're just assuming our readers have piss-poor retention, and clearly the editors aren't paying attention, so we'll just repeat repetition and duplicate verse. We'll restate and rehash and reprise and rehearse and rework and remind and reform and redo and resay and revert and recast and renew, reconstruct, recrudesce, reproduce and rewrite, refashion, reiterate, relive and recite. Because fuck it. It's biblical. That's all that counts. So here's 9 chapters of names that no one can pronounce, and here's a chapter with a God-praising song that's a ripoff of Psalms and is 2 pages long. I find describing how dull this book is rather challenging, but in hopes that I can, here's my nearest analogy. You're at your grandma's, and there's this adorable clip that she's found on YouTube of dogs chasing lasers around. It's 12 minutes long, and it sucks, and what's more, she's shown you this same fucking montage before. So you sit through it all, and she says, here's one other thing. Well, First Chronicles is like the part where that next one is buffering. So sure, this book's useless, it just makes the thing thicker and inspires those reading it to put bleach in their liquor, but they need to remind you that, like it or not, the Bible sucks monkey nuts, in case you forgot.
The Holy Babel.
If, like me, you made it through the first 12 books of the Bible and say, well, that was crap, don't feel alone. It turns out the people writing this shit must have felt the same way, as 1 Chronicles is basically an alternate account that retells the entire fucking story to this point with a few minor tweaks and additions.
Apparently biblical reboots come faster than Spider-Man reboots. So he read this thing and said, you know what it needs is more exactly the same stuff again. Can we do another chorus of Samuel and then, you know, modulate up a step and then another chorus and then that should do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So joining us to reiterate and rephrase is my lovely wife, Lucinda. Lucinda, thanks for coming back for more.
Well, I did try the old not tonight, honey, I have a headache thing, but you weren't having any of that shit, so I'm here with my fucking bells on.
There you go. All right, apparently the people charged with summing up the first dozen books read them and said to themselves, you know which parts suck? The ones that aren't soul-crushing genealogies, because they elect to start this book out with 9 straight chapters of begats. What do we say we start our summary in chapter 10?
Yeah, in case anybody forgot what a horrible fuck-up Saul was, we rehash how the Israelites got their asses kicked under his command again.
And with Saul's last words before he dies, he asked his gay slave to kill him, quote, lest these uncircumcised come and abuse me. So, so the Gimp refuses, and Saul has to fall on his own sword to avoid capture and the inevitable lifetime of, I don't know, apparently some sort of legendary Philistine foreskin slap torture. But they're, seriously, he was terrified, whatever it was.
Chapter 11 is a brief list of ancient Jewish badasses and a few vainglorious accounts of the ass that they kicked.
Yeah, at a certain point, it starts reading like a really long, rambling acceptance speech at the Oscars. And I'd like to thank all the Benjamites and the Judahites that came to the stronghold of David. And I want to thank Eliezer, Joash, Jeziel, and Pelet for bringing David bread when he was unable to move about freely. And where are all my Manasites at? Adonai, Josabad, Jedeo, Mikey, my main man, Elihu.
And cue the music, play him off. Yeah, so to summarize what Noah just said there, this book is boring compared to the Oscars, like James Franco, Anne Hathaway, worst host ever, boring ass Oscars.
Oh my God.
That should tell you all you need to know.
Right, and then there's this groovy remix of Uzzah gets killed for touching the Ark.
It's almost like at this point that the book is admitting that it's too boring to read.
Yes.
You know, they're saying, yeah, there was this dude Uzzah and he exploded when he touched the Ark, and we talked about all that before, but we gotta figure you were skimming at that point, so here it is again.
This book is sounding more and more like the Chris Farley Show, isn't it? Like, remember when Seven and they carried the Ark of God on a new cart from House of Abinadab, and Uzzah and Ahio were driving the cart, Eight and David and all Israel were celebrating before God with all their might, with songs and lyres and harps and tambourines and cymbals and trumpets. That was awesome. Stupid. I'm such an idiot. Obviously, it was awesome. He said it was good at the beginning. I'm an idiot.
And so that you know that we're not overstating the boring here, consider this. We're not just reading unpronounceable lists of Bronze Age Jewish royalty. We're rereading unpronounceable lists of Bronze Age Jewish royalty.
Re-skimming.
Yeah, well, that's closer.
Yeah. And in case you somehow managed to miss the entire central theme of the last four books we just fucking read, 1 Chronicles reminds us that David is awesome and he kicks much ass.
Yeah, God's pleased with David, I guess, for carrying his exploding death box around and also for fucking anything with 3 holes. So he gives him a really nice house for his harem of 3,000 women and their shitty redheaded stepchildren. Bottom line, God's happy and David's getting more ass than Muhammad Ali aiming for pussy. So all's good in Israel.
I get this feeling like the whole book was inspired by somebody reading the last 4 books and saying, I can't imagine a more boring way to present the history of Israel, and another guy saying, I can.
Yeah, it's like listening to a kid tell a joke that they don't get over and over and over again.
Yeah. Reading 1 Chronicles is like listening to your shitty 5-year-old nephew tell a joke on the phone. Just making it even worse. First, you get 30 seconds of what sounds like a litter of puppies fighting to lick bacon grease off the receiver while the stupid man tries to get the phone in his hand. They put italics, question marks in there for no reason to terrible spots. Yeah, and then Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, killed 18,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt. Okay, bye. They don't even know where they're going. It's worse.
In conversation with my nephew.
In 19, we revisit the whole Ammonite servant shaving war because I don't even fucking know why. Because ancient Israel was the most boring place ever.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, a few emissaries get wedgied by Hunan and they're gossiping about it for 4 goddamn centuries. Seriously?
here's the quote. So Hanun took David's servants and shaved them and cut off their garments in the middle at their hips and sent them away. You got to picture this. I think we made an assless chaps joke when they told the exact same story the first time, which was hilarious. I mean, assless chaps on desert-dwelling Jewish midgets is just about 24-karat comic gold. But what we didn't mention is the genius wardrobe suggestion for a Koran-friendly compromise towards Muslim porn. The women could trade in their eye slit for a tit slit or a slit slot. One or the other. You get one slot. One slit. Somehow.
Slot.
You could show something.
The trip down memory cul-de-sac continues.
Yep. We relive all the excitement of counting the cedar trees used to build the temple as we transition from David to Solomon in chapter 22.
And in 23, lest we forget, we learn once again that Levites don't have to do work.
This is probably the single most oft-repeated edict in the book so far. Levites are special and don't have to do shit that's
right.
Sweaty.
Yes, exactly.
Lazy bastards.
And then chapter 24 is probably the current leader for the most boring individual chapter in the Bible. It's another detailed genealogy, this time of Moses and Aaron, which we've already read once in the Pentateuch, once at the beginning of this book, and again in the directly antecedent chapter.
Got it.
And it continues to hold that title until chapter 25, where we get a detailed 24-part genealogy of the lyre, harp, and cymbal players. Fuckering fuckatash. Seriously? Even them?
I don't get it, though. Jews are a musical people, but a possessed front man having spasms and speaking in tongues accompanied by lyre, harp, and cymbals? That's the worst band ever.
You can't dance to it.
No rhythm there. And then they follow up the biblical this one time at Bandcamp story with an even more detailed genealogy of the bouncers that worked the temple door. We're getting everybody in this fucker. It's ridiculous.
And then one for all the civil servants.
Right. I feel like an asshole even covering this book. It's like the fucking last four books' greatest hits. In 28, we're reminded of just how fucking gilded the temple Solomon was building was.
The temple of our housewife of Beverly Hills.
And then David dies again. Solomon's anointed again. They kill a bunch of bulls again. And holy shit, this reading the Bible shit was a horrible idea.
I'm so fucking excited. There's another Chronicles coming up after this one. It's pretty awesome. I'm like Hayden Christensen excited about it. What? Anakin was the bomb in Phantom Menace, so.
Word, bitch. Phantom Menace like a motherfucker.
I feel like a rape victim at halftime, though. Seriously. It's like a confusing, poignant moment. It's bittersweet. You know you're going to lose, but you've accomplished half of it. I don't know how to feel. I just don't know how to feel.
I don't know. I feel like we should apologize to our listeners for how boring the Bible is. I can't imagine how we're going to keep from putting them to sleep when we do the Second Chronicles, man.
Well, look on the bright side. At least neither of you guys have to write a fucking poem about it. All right, so after all that, this is hard for me to say, but the Holy Babel will be back in episode 52 with Second Chronicles, but don't worry, I'm sure that one will be awesome.
Fucking hate this book.
Before we close the hood tonight, I wanted to thank everybody for their ideas for mashups and flashbacks for our 50th episode next week. We're still taking suggestions, so if you have a favorite skit, moment, interview, or vulgarity from our first 49 shows, let us know. You'll find all the contact info on the contact page of our website. And if you just can't get enough me, you'll find me all over the podcasting world this week, apparently. Tom and Cecil were kind enough to invite me back on Cognitive Dissonance to give them a tarot reading that I was telling you about earlier. Cash and Love from Atheist on Air invited me on their show last Monday to talk about sex and circumcision, and John and JD at Rational Talk invited me on to chat about this program and all the behind-the-scenes stuff it takes to pull it off every week. You'll find links to all these shows on the show notes for this episode at scathingatheist.com. Of course, I need to thank Heath for all of his wit and his wisdom. I need to thank Lucinda for suffering through probably the most boring book of the Bible so far with us. I also really, really need to thank Mackenzie and Mackenzie's mom for providing the hands-down cutest Farnsworth quote to date. Lucinda and I honestly listened to that like 5 times when we got it. It was awesome. Thank you very much. But most of all, of course, I need to thank this week's most stellar exemplifications of sentient stardust, Shelby, Vinny, John, Jeff, Magnus, Thomas, Ramesh, and Ben. Shelby, who's so kick-ass they named a Mustang after her back when Mustangs looked cool. Vinny, whose mighty member is worshipped by island people throughout the Pacific because most of them can see it. John, whose legendary sexual prowess echoes on the lips of carnal professionals the world over. Jeff, whose IQ has multiple exponents. Magnus, the Supreme Chancellor of the Intergalactic Defense Federation. Thomas, whose humility forced Time Magazine to settle for the Pope last year. Ramesh, who's so classy he gets his whoop-ass from a bottle, and Ben, whose ejaculations are measured on the enhanced Fujita scale. This octuple of brave, soulless individuals have tested their mettle against the unforgiving crucible that is our donation page and returned stronger, smarter, and more appealing to members of the opposite sex. If you think that you, too, have the psychological acuity required to become a sponsor of our show, you'll find the donate button on the right side of the homepage at scathingatheist.com. And remember, Lucinda and I need to buy a new timing belt and all the other requisite auto parts that constitute a full vehicle, preferably all pre-assembled and fully functional, so every dollar helps. And of course, if you want to help but you're afraid we'll just use the money to buy booze, you can also help us a ton by leaving us a glowing review on iTunes and telling your friends about the show, especially the ones who might eventually listen to it. You can also find us on all the finest social media sites and Facebook, and don't forget to listen to us on Stitcher if you're into that kind of thing. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission.
penis, vagina, vagina, vagina.
Penis.
Breastuses. All right.
Silly boys.